Good morning and greetings of love to each one here this morning. For a message this morning, you may turn, if you care to the book of 1 Samuel. I'd like to take a message from an Old Testament account and make some parallels to the Christian life. You may have recognized 1 Samuel 17 as being the account of David and Goliath, and you are exactly right if that's what you thought about. Very common story that most of us we've heard, and it's a story that is told and retold in a vast variety of religious circles. It's just a very common story, and for most of us Western Hemisphere people, it's a very interesting story, a captivating story, because of some of the details and some of the scenarios surrounding this, how that you have a huge, great, big giant and a small, young, opposing warrior, and how all the details worked out. I'd like to take it a little bit deeper this morning than that. Definitely going to pull a lot of types and shadows and parallels out of that. But getting us up to 1 Samuel 17, in 1 Samuel 15, we have the account of when Saul was commanded to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, and Saul failed to do that. That's when he saved the best of the cattle and the sheep and so on and so forth. At that point is when, right following that failure of Saul, is when God said to Samuel, he said, how long are you going to mourn for this? How long is it going to be? He said, I have chosen somebody else to be the king. And right following that in 1 Samuel 16, is when we have the account of David being anointed to be the next king of Israel. In the end of chapter 16, we have the account where David is brought into the courtroom. I'm not sure if that's quite the right word, but Saul, because of the Spirit of God departing from Saul, and he had an evil spirit, and he was a very troubled man, because of an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him, they called for somebody who could play music, could play the harp, and David was called on to come and minister to Saul in this way. And David did that. David came, and Saul loved him. It soothed Saul's spirit. And Saul asked that David could just stay there and minister to him and help him. And at the very end of 16, verse 22, Saul sent to Jesse, which was David's father, and said, let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight. And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand. And so Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. Right following that, we have the story of of David and Goliath and the account there. Likely was time elapsed in between there. I don't know how much time. Just a couple of things that make us think that. At the end of chapter 17 of the account of David and Goliath, Saul asked around and said, who is this man that killed Goliath? He was just playing the harp for him. You mean you didn't know? Okay, there was probably some time elapsed in there. Likely. Some Bible scholars feel like could be a number of years. Some Bible scholars feel like that at the account of him fighting Goliath, he was probably about 22, 23 years old. Some of that speculation, it's not critical to the validity of the story, but it's interesting. He's probably just a very young man. I'd like to begin by, I'm going to do a fair amount of reading, but I will try to keep my part of it short so we don't go over time. If I could begin reading a little bit in chapter 16, which I read the last two verses. Now let's see if we jump over to chapter 17. I want to go down kind of into the middle of the chapter, there's a section of verses here that we can pull out, and it doesn't really affect the actual fighting of Goliath. If you go down to verse 12, this gives us a little bit more information of the background to the actual confrontation of David and Goliath. 1 Samuel 17, verse 12, it says, "Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the next unto him was Abinadab, and the 3rd was Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening, and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn, and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul, and they, and all the men of Israel, were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and left his sheep with a keeper, and took and went, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench, as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. I'm going to stop reading there for for a moment. Now, I mentioned that I'd like to draw some types and shadows and some lessons from this account for our spiritual life today. And I realized that by some Bible scholars and some historians that this account very likely could have had a lot more meaning to the people of that era than what I first commonly take from it. If I can just give you a little bit of an example, this is not original with me, but I found it very intriguing and very interesting. Typically, people in the Eastern culture will look at numbers as a symbol first, and then as a quantity. In the Western world, we tend to look at it as a quantity and then a symbol. For example, and we'll read that here in a bit, but we read about Goliath. And maybe I'm wrong, and I don't know if you can agree with me or not, but when I hear or read the story of Goliath, when I hear how tall he was, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Let's compute this in feet and inches. How big was this man? Okay? And we hear the story of his armor, and it says how many shekels. We right away, okay, how much does it equate? How much did his shekel weigh? I mean, and what's it compute? How much was his whole armor and his spear? And we want to just get this all out, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. This other Bible scholar historian says, and there, I guess apparently there are some translations. Some, let's just read that. I'm getting ahead of myself, getting the information here. Chapter 17, verse 1 says, "Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shoco, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span, and he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him." I'm just going to pause right there because I just want to capitalize on some of the details there. Some translations, some versions, some information would say that the weight of his coat of mail was 6,000 shekels of brass. Our version says 5,000. Which is correct? I don't exactly know for sure. It doesn't really affect the validity of the account, but if I can make the illustration, the one Bible scholar historian said, in their minds of that day, there was a lot more details packed into this than what we would first tend to think. Okay, so the first thing, Goliath was 6 cubits and a span. Okay, the next thing, if that was correct, his armor was 6,000 shekels of brass. And then the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. So we tend to compute all that into saying, how tall, how heavy, how big was this? He said, and to a lot of them, and to David, likely, this information was given. He said, you don't think it was just by chance. But to those people and to David, he heard those dimensions, those figures, and he heard 666. And he said, to them, that was the mark of the beast. This was a spiritual battle. Okay, this was a battle portrayed between, if you can say, God and the devil. This was real. And I'm going to read some more here at this point. And I give that as interesting information that's not necessarily all scripture, and yet it doesn't take away from scripture, and it does add. I do think there's a lot more in the scriptures that we can continually learn that does not take away from scripture, but it just adds to the it adds to the sovereign, the all-knowing, the all-wise God, how that these stories can all tie together and can all be consistent and line up with the principles of God. Starting in at verse 8, he's talking about Goliath. He says, and he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Jumping down to verse 32. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord hath delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with the coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him, and he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near to David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted, and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag, and took thence a stone, and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine, and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran, and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword, and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose, and shouted, and pursued the Philistines, until thou comest to the valley, and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way, to Shearim, even unto Gath, and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine, and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. I'm just going to stop reading there. I've titled the message this morning, The Giant in the Valley. Now, just, I guess, being, like I said, which is fairly typical for us, is just some of the conversions for the height and the facts of Goliath here. Typically, we would consider a cubit as to being 18 inches. And so if we computed that out, Goliath would have been approximately 9 feet, 9 inches tall. His coat of mail, if you use the 5,000 shekels, would translate into 156 pounds and 4 ounces. That was his armor, 156 pounds plus. His spear's head would have, just the head alone, would have weighed about 18, 19 pounds. I get the picture that, and this doesn't need to be said, but Goliath obviously was very, very immense, intense, intimidating. And I just have a number of points that I see in this story that portray the Christian life and the giants that he faces. And I have 10 points, and I don't plan to take long on each point. They're brief and they're short, but there's 10 things I want to look at. Number one is that giants are intimidating. This is so clear to me looking at Goliath. He was very intimidating. Giants seem unrealistic. Giants seem and feel invincible. Giants make false claims. Goliath said that if someone killed him, the Philistine would be the Israelite servants. Well, someone killed him, and were the Philistines Israelite servants? No. They turned and ran. Spiritually speaking, our giants seem to have some of the same characteristics. And I'm going to mention here that I think it's very, I think this is a correct statement, that we all have giants in our life that need to be faced. Okay? The giant that you are facing may not be the same one that I'm facing, but I think from what I understand and hear from Christians, that they're fighting and facing giants. And so with that assumption, we're going to go through the message. But when you are facing your giants, if you're like me, you are typically going to look at some of your giants as seeming to be intimidating, to be invincible maybe. I tend to feel like I'm never really able to conquer my giant. I may feel like I don't have what it takes to conquer. And you may even feel sometimes like people wouldn't understand why you would even have a giant like this, whatever it is in your life. And these things can vary, like I said, with people. I can find myself in the, and I say this very carefully, cautiously, and thankfully, but I can find myself in the presence of tobacco, for example, and it does not pose a temptation for me. And I realize for some other brethren and other people, that could pose a tremendous struggle. I say that carefully, and I don't need to say that to bring out a point, because there's a multitude of other things that very quickly tend to make me struggle and want to trip me up. Okay, so it's not like I don't have my giants. I don't mean it that way at all. My point is that your giant may have a different name or a face than what my giant does, but we all have giants. Philippians 4 verse 19 says, "But my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus." While giants are intimidating and seem invincible, they are not. You can conquer with the help of God. 1 Peter 1 5 says, "Who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time." 2 Corinthians 12:9, "He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." Number two, we will encounter real giants through normal, everyday life. David was just doing what he was supposed to be doing. He was obedient to his father. He was faithful with his sheep, and his father said, "I want you to go, and I want you to check on your brothers to see how they're making out in the army." Everyday life. Simple obedience, simple faithfulness. And then what happens is he encountered a giant. Today, we can be doing just what we are supposed to be doing, and we can encounter a giant. It can be the fact of just some days where everything seems to go wrong, and it can be very easy to try to justify a fit of anger. And we can tend to get upset, and we can get angry, and we can take it out on people. We can take it out on people around us. That's a giant. It needs dealt with, but we will encounter real giants through everyday life. We can be in a totally innocent frame of mind and doing exactly what we're supposed to do, and we can come across a horrendously immodest picture, or even society, the way people dress. These are giants that will pop up in everyday life that need to be dealt with. Point number three, the giants we encounter in life are not always a result of our personal choices. And what my point is that this giant that faced Israel and that David personally faced then wasn't necessarily David's fault, okay? Could Saul have been some to blame because he didn't destroy the Amalekites totally? If we looked at the two armies, likely Saul would have been one of the first ones who typically should have went and fought Goliath. Saul was head and shoulders above everybody else when he was anointed to be king. So if you're looking at stature and size, Goliath would still have been bigger than that, but Saul would have been probably one of the first ones that should have went. We are all born with the Adamic nature, with the carnal nature, and with that comes our flesh, and which brings giants. Sometimes other people have done things that either intentionally or unintentionally have hurt us, and we are left to deal with it. And we have this giant of forgiveness, or this giant of resentment, or this, I shouldn't say a giant of forgiveness, but a giant of needing to forgive, or this giant of resentment that we need to deal with. I would say, however, that our giants will be personal to us, okay? And yes, we all have giants that we must face. Satan knows who you are, and he knows your weakness. And rest assured, your giants will tend to be in your weak areas. That's just a fact. Point number four, we usually do not choose what our giants are, but they come to us. It's just more of what I was saying. We're talking about a spiritual battle this morning. And the devil knows what your weakness and what my weakness is, and he will attack you there. It can be anger, it can be lust, it can be immorality, it can be unforgiveness, it can be depression, it can be fear, and the list can go on. We don't get to choose an easy giant. Giants are big, ominous, threatening, overwhelming situations. Things that we need to face and deal with head on. Point number five, real giants are a spiritual threat and therefore require a spiritual battle. It goes without being said, but there is the two kingdom concept in the scriptures. This life is the valley where we face the giants. Satan wants to defeat us now so that we are defeated for eternity. But God has created us creatures of choice and given us everything we need to be victorious now, so that we can live with him for eternity. The results of how we live in this life will have everything to do with eternity. Point number six. Simply talking about our giants, but not dealing with them, results in frustration, confusion, fear, defeat. The Israelites were in this situation for 40 days. I can only imagine that after they turned and ran in fear back to their tents, that they were probably talking amongst themselves and talking to each other, and they said, tomorrow we have to get Goliath. Somehow we have to get him. We have to conquer him. We just have to kill him some way tomorrow. And then tomorrow they go out and face him, and they turn and ran back again. A question that we need to ask ourselves is my giant a weakness or is it a sin? How well do you like your sin? You know it's wrong, but you love it too much to completely conquer. Again, the list goes on. It can be sensual music. It can be lust. Our world, our society is saturated with lust. It's still wrong. The pictures, the immodesty, the news articles, it's all around us. But how long will we halt between two opinions? How long will we feel like we need to get on top of this, and we go in our own strength and we fail? We come back to our tents. And the next day we go out and we try to face it again and we fail. We come back and defeat. And we go out and we fail and we come back over and over. They were doing this for 40 days. Point number seven. Failure to kill the giant will result in lifelong bondage. A lot of these points overlap some, but I don't know how all this works. I'm just capitalizing here on one of the details of David. After he slung that stone, and it's details that aren't really, really critical, but it could be that the stone killed Goliath. It could be that the stone it said it sank into his forehead, and it could be that it stunned him and he was down. Okay, he was a down man. But David wasn't taking any chances. David went the whole way. That's my point. If we don't kill the giant, it will result in lifelong bondage. David went, and he made sure that that Goliath was completely dead. Complete, final, there's no turning back. The same is for us. We have to go all the way. There's no halfway victories. Do whatever it takes to get victory and make your victory sure. Make yourself accountable to someone for your struggle. Know your giant and take measures to make sure you deal with him completely. Stay away from temptation when we can. Sometimes those giants pop up without premeditation. I understand that. But most of the time we know what our giants are in a lot of ways, and we need to take measures to avoid being tempted. 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee fornication. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee also youthful lust. 1 Timothy 6:11, but thou, O man of God, flee these things. Let's do our part, and let's make sure we kill the giant. Point number 8, worldly wisdom never works in defeating giants. I just like to use the type here of David trying to use Saul's armor. I realize that Saul meant this well. I think Saul meant for David to be protected. He felt like it was the least he could do to give him protection. David tried it on, and he said, I can't use this. I can't go with this. Even if it was a lot smaller of a scale from what Goliath wore, it still would have presented a lot of baggage and a lot of weight. That's not, David said, I can't do this. I can't use it. I haven't proved it. Sometimes our worldly wisdom around us gets us in trouble. Sometimes we have the mindset and a thought, or we hear thoughts and ideas like, it's just the way I am. It's the way I'm made. It's the way my dad and grandpa were too. What am I to do? It's just the way we are. I couldn't help what other people did, so I'm a victim. And I say this carefully and cautiously, but let's beware of support groups that lack the accountability part of the group, okay? I'm all in favor of accountability groups and of a church body, okay? That's a tremendous strength and help. We do find a fair amount in society, and I don't know where all, but you'll find these support groups that can tend to make you feel good, but doesn't really hold you accountable and help you get to complete victory. Just beware of that. Worldly wisdom never works in defeating a giant. Point number 9. The world knows that God's people should have what it takes to defeat the giants. I'd like to go back and read verse 8. This is Goliath speaking. It says, and he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? I wonder what all was going through Goliath's mind, and I wonder what all was going through the Israelites' mind. Could it be, some Bible scholars feel that it was likely that the Philistines knew about the Spirit of God leaving Saul after his failure with the Amalekites? We don't know that. Could be. But it's a sobering thought to think that society around us and the world knows that God's people should have what it takes to defeat giants. They know that. Somehow they know that. The world doesn't expect God's children to have known immorality in their circles. They don't expect God's children to condone and bless thievery or retaliation or unforgiveness. They expect more. They expect more of the church and of God's children than that. Society holds the church to a high standard even if they don't come out and say it. They don't expect to see an ongoing defeated church or defeated church members. If the church can't defeat her giants, what would attract society to join a church? Point number 10. God's way of defeating giants does not make sense to the world. Just a couple things I want to pull out here. I believe that David had faith. Verse 45. And whether David saw this, as some Bible scholars feel, as far as a real spiritual battle, I don't know, but it seems like maybe he did. David said to Goliath, he says, "Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." I believe David was very competent with the sling. There's another account that's not speaking about David, but it's back in the book of Judges. It talks about that there was 700 men that were all left-handed, that everyone could sling stones at an hairbreadth and not miss. So, I mean, they were used to that. I think David felt competent with what he was doing, and yet in the face of such odds, I do think that David had faith as well. I don't think David was totally trusting in himself. I think David was ready to go face Goliath because he knew what he was doing was right, and he knew that God would be with him and God would help him. He says, "I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." That doesn't make sense to the world. David used proven methods. A lot of these proven methods, if we look back in the history of God's children, these proven methods have proved themselves. That's why they're called that. You can use the illustration of biblical child training, the separation of church and state, the separated lifestyle, the voice of the brotherhood in working through non-moral decisions. These are all things that have proven themselves to work well. And we do well to use and take advantage of these methods of defeating giants. It won't make sense to the world, but it works. 1 John 5, verse 4 says, "For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith." Following verse, verse 5 says, "Who is he that overcometh the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God?" In closing, just have a couple questions. So how is it with you? How is it with me? Are you living in defeat? Are you going out to fight your giant but returning time after time in fear and defeat? Do you have what it takes to overcome your giant? Matthew 28, verse 20 says, "Teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you even always, even unto the end of the world." Amen. John 17:14. This is Jesus speaking here. It says, "I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world." Brothers and sisters, God has given us promises and given us the tools and the resources that we are without excuse in defeating our giants, whatever they are. It's not easy. We can't do it on our own strength, but we have what it takes when we're on God's side. We can defeat our giants, and we can live in victory. Let's kneel for prayer.